Welcome to Overtures. It's not often that I have a guest that I went to school with that I somehow did not know at all. So this was such a fun episode getting to know each other and learning more about music direction and much more. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats. We'll be starting shortly. Everyone, welcome to Overtures. Welcome in. Happy Wednesday, halfway through the week. I hope you're having a good week, but if you're not, that's okay, because you're halfway there, almost done, getting there slowly but surely. thanks for joining me for this lovely evening episode. It's been a while since I've gotten to have an evening episode of Overtures, but it's nice. I've got the twinkle lights on in the background. We've got the lighting figured out. It's a bit more moody and cozy, but that's okay. I like the vibe. So let's go ahead and get started. So welcome to episode 65 of Overtures. And luckily today I get to start with a fun clip. So here we go.
Hi everybody. My name is Drew. And this is a little jazz rendition of a song I found on TikTok. So grab a drink. This is Forefathers by Liam St. John. Well, my mama worked the graveyard, and my daddy was gone. So I spent my nights with Ray Charles. I cried to Louis Armstrong. Well, my mama, she was always there, digging us out of the hole. But my father, he never cared. Now he don't even pick up the phone. So I call Jim Beam when I'm in need, Evan Williams if I'm out of money, Johnny Walker picks up day and night, and Jack Daniels, he always gives me great advice.
I think that's a great introduction to this episode and my guest. Born and raised in Dillsburg, Pennsylvania, my guest received his BA in theater performance from Wagner College. He recently made his professional music directorial debut with Shaboom, Life Could Be a Dream, and the 2022 Holiday Spectacular at Ocean City Theater Company. He currently serves as the Associate Artistic Director for Theater Untitled and as a Senior Teaching Artist for the Educational Branch, Actors Professional Theater Conservatory. He also works as a voice and acting teacher for Inner Artist Performance Studios. My guest and I did go to school together, and I believe we were only 1 year apart, but we somehow completely missed each other. So I am super excited to chat with him more in depth about this crazy thing we do. So without further ado, this is Drew Patty.
Hey. Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on and joining me.
Of course.
It's so crazy how life ends up. But, you know, I'm glad we're actually getting to chat now. So
yes, it's so funny to say Wagner College and we did not know each other.
Yeah, especially considering how small and tight-knit the theater department is, just somehow completely missed each other.
Yes. I had quite a Wagner College journey, so
Oh, yeah?
It doesn't really surprise me that much that
Fair enough.
A lot of people are like, you went to Wagner? I was like, yeah, the same time you went. And it's like, I didn't know. And I was like,
you're like, yeah. Wow, whoops. But you know, that's okay. It all pans out. It's all good.
It ended up being fine. I got the piece of paper. It's all good.
Exactly. And in the end of the, at the end, what more could you need? What more could you need?
Truly.
And you were technically class of 2020, yeah?
Technically, yes.
Gotcha. Fair enough.
I was, yes, whatever that ended up being, because it was the COVID year.
Of course.
So I didn't technically graduate until December of 2020.
Oh, gotcha.
Because I don't know if anyone knows this, but I dropped out.
Oh.
And then I came back.
Interesting. What an interesting journey that was.
It was an interesting journey. It was a whole year pretty much that I'd been away, and then to be able to get back to the point where I'd started
yeah
and just clean up a couple things.
Did you come back did you come back when the pandemic had already happened, or did you had you come like left and come back before the pandemic? Well, yeah, it must have been before then, because that would have been 2019, 2020.
Yeah, I left. I had started in 2016, mm-hmm. In the fall. By midterms of 2017, I was gone. Mm. Midterms were about to start, and I was like,
"You're like, gotta go, bye."
And then I don't think I came. I think I came back in the spring of 2018.
Gotcha. That would then, I think, make sense as to how we didn't quite cross paths, because mm-hmm. I feel like that's a good chunk right in the middle there. And then I was a senior, and then suddenly I was gone. But
right. You know.
But that's okay, because you ended up reconnecting down the line later on, because you and I have both moved to New York City since then. And mm-hmm. you were in about a year ago now. You were, or a year ago, time does not exist. You were working on a musical featuring the music of the band, The Deer Hunter. And so I ended up getting involved with that project. I think Jay Biz had sent it to me on Instagram and looped me in, and then
wow.
And then I sent clips to you, and you were like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, you know what, you were one of the, there's a couple of people, but you were one of the only people that like actually did the callback material. Like, I was treating it like it was a highly coveted production, like a
professional thing.
I was like, here's callback, like I had sides ready and everything, and you did send the song back, and yeah. I was like, oh, you're really, really into this. And it was really,
I respected it. I was like,
it
look,
it made original. My heart so happy.
I'm so glad. Well, it's like when someone's like working on their own stuff, I feel like, I don't know, it's helpful to be able to get a sense of what they can do, especially because it was, I mean, I hesitate to call it a jukebox musical by any means, but it's music that did already exist. And so getting a sense of like, oh, can this person sing this music that isn't necessarily considered musical theater?
Right. It's not even like, not even close.
No.
Like, the music itself is experimental by nature. So it's like, I'm mm-hmm. asking people to do the impossible for free,
yeah.
Which was crazy.
but
it was really nice.
It was fun. And I'm sad we didn't get to work on it more, because unfortunately the project had to be put on hold. But mm-hmm. I was curious, did you want to talk about that at all and how it first came about? Because I feel like there's a lot leading up to when I came in contact with it.
Yeah, I had been with, a little bit of a longer backstory. I was introduced to the music of The Deer Hunter actually in marching band.
I love that. That makes my heart so happy.
I played the trombone in school, but I was marching baritone, and nice. And we had a show called Battle, and it was three or four songs from Act Three, mm-hmm. which is like this big war in the story point. And I was like, this is crazy music.
and then
it's really interesting from a marching band perspective. I was like, oh yeah, I didn't even realize that this was like actual music also.
Mm-hmm.
And a buddy of mine, Harrison, was like, oh yeah, you should listen to some of their other stuff. And I fell down the rabbit hole, and my family had moved from Pennsylvania to North Carolina. So when I was doing that drive from Staten Island to Charlotte, I had a lot of time, and yeah. I was like, I'll just listen to all of it. So in the 10-hour drive, I listened to Act One, top of Act One to end of Act Five in one sitting.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like 5.5 hours. I'd gotten to like Virginia at the hotel I was staying at. And I was like, this is a story that I must put to paper. And so it was like 5 years of writing it.
Oh,
by
wow.
the time you, or I even put the project out, but where yeah. you saw it, it had gone through drafts and song changes and this, that, and the other thing. And I wanted to get a reading of it to see if I was crazy or if this is like, if this could be a thing.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think also the fact that the albums are like literally an axe, like
it's
very
one.
Indicative of there being a story. And it's,
I mean, it starts with yeah. an overture.
Exactly. So you're like, look, it's begging for it.
I was like, come on. You can't. There's a song. One of the lyrics in the songs is like, the stage is set or something. And I was like, they did this on purpose. They wanted me to do this. But I had to call it off because of legal reasons.
Yeah.
Because I was stealing. Yeah. And so I had reached out to, I had saw the band in Philly. And I talked to Casey, who's the lead singer and kind of the, you know, main component to the Deer Hunter. And we had talked a little bit. I had reached out to their manager and said, hey, I have a script. Here it is. I would love to do this. And I, you know, I work for a theater company. I would love, how can we get this reading? And without getting into the nitty gritty of the email, it was basically like, the Deer Hunter has other projects happening right now. This is something that they've wanted to do for a long time. You know, let's reconnect once, because they're about to go on a European tour. Yeah. Let's reconnect after the craziness. And I was like, great.
Yeah, because here's the thing. In the grand scheme of things, that's so much better than a no or not getting to hear back at all. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was ready for them to not even respond. I had sent it at like 2 a.m. I was, funny enough, I was at Forestburg at the time. I had sent it at 2 a.m. I like sent it, went to bed, woke up at like 7, and I had a response.
Wow, that's a quick response too.
It was crazy. It was the craziest day to be like, the whole day I was like, how am I going to write this email? And then within like 5 hours getting a response. It was
insane. Wild. But I can imagine that also must feel so good that you're like, I'm so excited to work on these other projects and then get to return to this. So
yeah,
hopefully later down the line, we can literally reference this conversation and be like, these were like the beginnings and like that kind of thing, which is so cool for you.
Yeah, it would be really exciting to see whatever, if anything happens to it, it'd be really cool.
Absolutely. So going back to the beginning of things, how did you first get started in theater?
You know, I knew this question was coming. So I so I really thought about it. I don't think I was ever meant for theater. I would argue that I'm still not because of a lot of thoughts, feelings, and opinions. But I don't think I wanted to get into theater. When I was however old I was when this movie came out, I wanted to be Troy Bolton in High School Musical.
Absolutely.
The movie had came out and I was like, well, and I was growing up, I was a sporty kind of guy. So I was like, I was playing basketball at the time. So I was like, I got that part.
You're like, this is me.
Like, I was like, I got that part. I can grow my hair out. There's this singing component though. And my grandmother, my Nana, she had signed me up for a theater camp called Actors Professional Theater Conservatory. And I was probably like 12 at the time. And I went and, I did their camp. We did like a Frankenstein version of Our Town with like classic songs in between, like Boom Boom Pow by the Black Eyed Peas. It was a riot.
That's very Frankenstein, and I'm obsessed with that.
It was crazy. And that was like my first introduction. I was like, this is cool because I can kind of like, you know, do whatever. And then the next year they were doing High School Musical. And I was like, well, I gotta give it a try. And this is not for comedy, this is not for the podcast. I had a Troy Bolton moment.
Yeah.
Where I had tryouts for the basketball team.
Oh my God.
And I was there. And it was like, however many people there were, I was the only person that got cut.
Oh my God. From the team?
From the team. Like, we had tryouts. Everyone gets the team but me. I leave there, go to the audition, and then for the next month, I'm playing Troy Bolton in High School Musical.
Like, I love the serendipity of the world when it does funny things like that, But when it specifically lines up to like the plot of High School Musical, that's really hilarious and fantastic.
Yeah, like I lived my whole dream in like 4 months.
That's crazy.
It was funny. And then from there it was like, oh, this is something that speaks to me in a way that I didn't think it would. And so I kept up with the camp and then did some other stuff at the same, because it was a theater. So I did some stuff at the theater, you know, Christmas shows and the mm-hmm. Sound of Music and whatever you could fit a 13-year-old boy into.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's how it started. It was like the legit High School Musical story.
I love that. No, it's I get a lot of Seussical as the answer to that. And I think High School Musical is starting to like raise its way in the ranks of what people's like first introductions to theater are. And I think that's awesome. So I'm curious then, what was your overture moment where you realized, oh, I think I'm actually going to like do this for a career?
Oh, wow. I didn't think there was anything else. I think in finding it and really identifying with it and then going to school, you know, because middle school is a great time for everyone.
Oh, of course.
And it was a lot of like, you know, you get bullied a lot for being a guy and singing and doing that whole like, you know, bullshit. And and it was one of those things that I was like, this was the thing that brought me any type of like identity, really.
Yeah.
So I think it was the one thing I found it. I really, really liked it. I thought I was good at it. So I was like, I want to do the thing. Yeah. And so I did. I kept up with it.
And good for you for going through like a middle school experience like that and not being like, oh, well, I don't know because people are like rude about it. And instead of being like, well, no, actually it makes me feel good. And like, that's what matters. Cause I think a lot of people kind of like back off when it comes to things like that. So like good for middle school Drew to be like, no, I'm doing this. Screw you.
Yeah, it was wild.
And then fast forwarding to like essentially the present in terms of mm-hmm. you being a performer, you recently got to be in Rocky Horror Show at Forestburg Playhouse, we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. And I know you were an understudy. Were you also a member of the ensemble too?
Yeah, I was slated to only be covering Eddie because the guy playing Eddie was not going to be there for two of the shows.
Okay, so that was predetermined from like the beginning.
Yeah, it was like, he has to do a show for 2 days. You're going to come sing Hot Patootie.
I was starting to, I clicked it too early, but yes, we can go ahead and bring it up. Continue talking though.
Yes. So it was like, you're going to sing Hot Patootie. It's not going to be a big deal, whatever. And I was like, cool. And then they're like, well, if he's going to be here to learn it anyway, we might as well just throw him into the Phantom track because it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
So then I was in the ensemble doing the Phantom thing. And then I think it was the day before the show, because we had multiple narrators based on mm-hmm. availability, the narrator that was supposed to go on and the narrators that were busy, that narrator got COVID.
Oh no.
So then I was also the narrator. I think it was just for the one show. And it was a crazy experience to go from like two shows to like you're in the show to like you're someone else in 24 hours.
yeah. And I mean, luckily a role like the narrator typically like has book in hand, literally. So like it that's did. Helpful, but at the same time you're still just like, okay, yeah, I'll go on for a role that like you told me about 24 hours. That's a swing life right there.
Yeah, having the script in hand, literally had the pages taped into a book.
Yeah.
But it's still like, it's the narrator. It doesn't help you from like the drunk heckling.
Yes, exactly. 100%. And of course, as I accidentally alluded to, we have a clip of you as Eddie. So we're going to go ahead and play that. I don't know why it's deciding to turn green, but you know what? We're just going to refresh and go from there. And what's fun about that is that luckily you had the knowledge previously. So I'm sure going on for that must have felt so much better in comparison.
It was like the only thing I felt confident about.
You were like, okay, this is like the one thing that I planned to do from the get-go. Let me finally play Eddie.
It was like 3 weeks of ensemble that I was in and had rehearsed. And I was like, I don't even feel good about this component. Of like being in like a French like maid outfit. I was like, this I don't feel good about. This part I do though.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a good role for you too. It's so fun. Eddie comes on, he does the thing, and then he pieces out and he's like, bye.
It's the ultimate princess track.
It really is. It is the ultimate princess track. Thanks, Meatloaf, for originating the original princess track.
Shout out.
It's fantastic. And then on the other side of things, really into the musical theater-y side of things, I saw from your website that you were in Spelling Bee at Ocean City Theater Company, and you played Vice Principal Panch. I absolutely adore Spelling Bee. It's one of my favorite shows to talk about, too, just given how unique the show is, but also the fact that quite literally it will never be the same show any given night.
Mm-hmm.
So, and especially for you as Panch, like you have the freedom to improvise. You're probably the one who improvises the most in the show, but you also have the responsibility that the show stays on track. So I'd love to hear about your experience in Spelling Bee.
And I would love to talk about it. Because it was like my first show post-pandemic. Or I mean, it was still the pandemic.
Yeah.
But it had been a little bit of time since theater was a thing.
Yeah.
And so outside of that component and, you know, the concept of a 24-year-old being 55... It was a little interesting, but I feel like shows like that, and I love Spelling Bee and I love the concept of it, but shows mm-hmm. like that have to be like, should be heavily rehearsed.
Yes.
Especially the components that are out of your control.
Yes. 100% agreed.
All of act one is like, you have no control.
It's flying by the seat of your pants at that rate and just hoping that the audience members that are brought up to spell will cooperate.
And almost all of them did.
Good, good. There's always just those, there's always those few who you're like, come on, buddy. Come on.
Well, we had talked about it in theory, mm-hmm. but we had never put it into practice literally until final dress.
That's hard. You really should be going through like a tech of having quote unquote volunteer spellers because that's tough.
Yeah. Even if it's like people in the production team.
Yeah.
Like, which we had like occasionally, but we had some students because we did it at a high school, which I thought was really cool.
That's fun.
And so we had the high school students come in and do the thing. And I was like, okay, this gives me like a good gist for what's about to be real.
Yeah.
But it went fine. I rewrote because a lot of for those who know the show or have done the show or haven't done the show, you get like a glossary of words.
It's fantastic.
That Panch can use with definitions and language of origin and everything. So
sentences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had that. And I would like to change it up by night because that that's fun. And
also like Panch is encouraged to like write his own too. Like the actor is encouraged to add more.
Yeah. So the director and I had a sit down and we came up with a bunch that I would use, and everything went off without a hitch. All the goodbyes happened the way they were supposed to, the right ones. I had my sister's now fiance was one of the spellers. And a friend of mine was also one of the spellers, and I was like, please just do, if it's a hard word, don't you just, you know,
just try.
Like I had spent like my whole pre-show was this, like, you know, trying to figure out how the show was going to go that day.
Yeah.
But I also wanted it to be funny because comedy is important to me.
Absolutely.
So I was like, okay, it's a matinee. How can I, like, what words can I use with these sentences to like shock the retirement home audience into having a good time? So I guess, I think it was closing, and the last person, it's the bit where it's like they spell the word wrong because it's a hard word, and then it's right.
Yeah.
I kind of like joke, and it's like, that was correct. And everyone's like, what?
Yeah.
It's that whole bit. That bit happened earlier because the first person that was supposed to get out didn't. And then I was sweating.
Yeah. Because you play that game of like, okay, do I try and get another different audience speller out? Or do I just keep calling them up until they get it wrong? Or do I purposefully just be like, oh, nope, you're wrong? Because there's different ways of handling it. But you're like, what should I do to keep it funny and enjoyable?
Yeah. And it's like, I just remember, because I saw the spellers and I was like, they're going to be smart. I knew that from the get-go. And I was like, I got to get the first person out first so I can get this on track.
Yeah.
Gets it right. And this is probably not allowed, but this performance was recorded. You can't see it anywhere, but it was recorded. And in the recording, it gets right. And you can see my face, and I look over at the actress playing Rona, and I was like, I was like the very subtle shaking my head of like, guess what? We're in trouble now.
Yeah. You're like, well, what do I do?
Oh, it was bad. So then I kept going as normal. And it was a little like kerfuffle. I think it was around the time of Magic Foot.
Mm-hmm.
And they went, you know, they got it right, went back. And I was like, hey, get back up here.
Yep.
and then gave them like an impossible word. They got out and it was fine. But it's horrifying. It's the most anxiety I've ever felt.
No, that's like, fair.
If this goes wrong, it is only my fault.
Yeah, unfortunately, all of the responsibility falls to the actor playing Panch.
And the set is set up, so it's like the kids are on the bleachers over here, the adults are over
it's
here.
It's just you
so
and like, Rona.
It's just me and Rona, and when it goes wrong, I just see the rest of the cast staring at me like, what you gonna do there, Patty?
And you're like, don't look at me like that.
I was like, I don't know. I have all of Pandemonium to figure it out. So,
you know, that's fair. And also that song doesn't exactly give you room to think either. So like,
no. And I was in it a little bit. Magic Foot is like a nice break, but I was in it also.
Yeah.
So it's like, I have to figure out what the next plan is. I'm putting tap shoes on at the moment. So
I'm sure Panch's meltdown gave you a nice like chance to like just freak out for a moment every night and then just go from there.
Some of those freakouts were a little bit more authentic than acting sometimes.
Oh my god. I love Spelling Bee, and I played Olive years ago, and I would.
Oh yeah.
It's so much fun. I want to go back and like play Logan or Miss Peretti at some point, cuz it's just such a fun show.
It's a phenomenal show. I think it does not get enough respect for it.
I agree.
I feel like it's really great. It's such an easy show to do. It's so fun. I don't know.
Some complicated harmonies, but other than that, like, incredibly fun. Incredibly fun.
Yeah, well, you know, William Finn wouldn't make it easy.
No, of course not. Of course not. And be in terms of now, granted, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, talking about plans mm-hmm. for the summer that you're doing. This mm-hmm. is going to be more on the music directing side, though, and that wouldn't be performing, correct?
That is correct.
What's coming up for you? You just posted it on your Instagram story, so I feel obligated to make you share.
Yes, the artwork just came out. I'm music directing a chopped and screwed, you know, crazy retelling of Hercules that I also wrote. I'm also music directing SpongeBob at the Forsberg Playhouse with the Forsberg Academy. This will be my third year teaching there. And so I'm really excited. Hercules, I'm really excited about.
Yeah, well, especially because you were saying before stream that you like wrote it with Hadley. So mm-hmm. that's going to be so fun to get to work on a piece that you wrote yourself.
Yeah, it's really, it's a crazy, you know, I wouldn't think it'd be that hard to make Hercules, the story kind of translate. And so I, not to give too much of it away, but I had changed a lot of the battling components to it because they're like, we got ages of like 8 to 11. So it's a battle of the bands is the whole arc.
I love that.
Yeah.
That sounds incredible. Oh my gosh. You guys really, are going to really have, exciting. You're going to have a blast. Like the kids mm-hmm. and you guys are going to have way too much fun on this.
Yeah, it's, I wrote it because there's a formula because we had done these shows before. And it's very much you're writing for the parents.
Totally.
Because it's so cool for like the parents to see their like 8-year-old daughter singing like Sweet Child of Mine. Like it's
absolutely.
You know, they're like, that's our music and from our time. Yeah. And so it's a really cool concept and I'm really excited.
That's so fun. I'm so excited for you guys and it'll be a blast to see like pictures and things like that once it happens and that kind of thing. And I'm going to keep chugging along here because I'm like, oh my gosh, we're already 35 minutes in. I was going to talk about the clip that you sent me of Lust, Love, Loss, a Relationship in Three Movements in relation to composing. I think I'm going to have to skip this section in order to talk about music direction with you, but I'm going to put a link to that composition that you made in the description of this video after the stream. That way people can go listen. But yeah, it was a really beautiful piece to listen to. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
Absolutely lovely. But then scooting along to the music directing, you recently made your professional music directorial debut at Ocean City Theater Company. Congratulations. How did it go?
It happened.
You know, that's all you can ask for sometimes.
It happened. It was it wasn't something that I tried to do. Mm-hmm. The music direction is very new to me. I did it last summer before Shaboom and the Christmas show with the children's stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was really just more of like, I'm really into music right now. Kids feel like a safe way to do it because if I am horrible at it, they won't know.
Yeah.
And so it was like a kind of like a testing the waters. And then I had submitted as an actor.
Gotcha. And they looked down your resume and they were like, you have this other skill.
It wasn't even on there.
Really?
No.
That's so funny.
It was like I'd submitted as an actor and because I had obviously been there with Spelling Bee, so the people at large over there follow me. And to this day, I don't know how it happened, but they were looking for actors. I submitted. They needed immediate replacements for actors. I had submitted again. And then they were like, do you want a music direct? I was like, okay.
You're like, do you trust me? I can, but like.
I was like, I can try. It was a really. It was a crazy time. It was a huge learning curve.
I bet. Because I'm sure to go from like working with kids in music direction to adults in music direction is much different.
Well, adults have opinions.
Yep.
Adults have opinions, and they, I mean, kids will also let you know when you.
Oh yeah, they're very blunt, like, as well.
Yeah, kids are blunt, but like, they're kids, so it's kind of mm-hmm. cute. And you're like, oh, did you hear what so and so said? That's hilarious. When adults do it, it hurts.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's 100% fair.
But I was like, I could try it. I mean, I'm familiar with my own skill set when it comes to the keyboard and reading music and, you know, what I think about singing as a concept.
Yeah.
But it was a behemoth of a show. I don't know if you know Shaboom. I wouldn't be surprised if
I'm
you didn't.
The thing is, I've seen it come up more and more on like regional theaters, like seasons.
Oh, really?
So mm-hmm. I have a gist of the fact that it like is set in like in and around the 50s and things like that, but I'm not as familiar with like the plot or the music, for example.
It's like a male Beehive.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
It's like all like doo-wop music mm-hmm. with, I'm sure there's a plot, but
with jukebox musicals such as like as Beehive, as you were just mentioning, like it's a very loose plot, and it's also built for the music to just be performed too.
Yeah, it's get us to the next song, right? Yeah. So, but it's
very like Marvelous Wonderettes. Yeah.
Very, yeah, like Shout the Mod musical, lot of that kind of stuff. But but everything's four part harmony. And it was a behemoth of a show to do.
Is it
was
it a
to
four
tracks.
Actor like
it was show. Five.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, so if you have one person per line, that also can get tricky too.
Well, yeah. So you had four gentlemen and a lady.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, everyone's on their own.
Yeah.
For harmonies. And the music doesn't really lend itself to that. It's just like right. chords and rhythms because it's old.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really awesome experience. It was a very hard 2.5 weeks to do it all. I didn't have to play, which was great. It was all tracked out.
That's helpful.
Yeah. And then the Christmas show after that, you would think Christmas music. Everyone knows Christmas music.
But there's so many different variations and arrangements that, like, not as easy as you would think.
Not as easy as you would think. And it was like it was a more dance show than anything.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well.
So it was like, you're dancing and that's great, but we have like a six part harmony.
And I need you to still sing it.
I need you to not be out of breath for.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, and granted this kind of a two-parter, like mm-hmm. what the preparation is like as a music director. And I can imagine, as you were just alluding to, there has to be a certain amount of collaboration with like, not only your director, but also like choreographer. And then if you had any instrumentalists for the Christmas show, then that'd be something as well. But I'm curious about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Christmas show was tracked out also, which was awesome.
Okay. Helpful.
The director and the choreographer were the same individual.
Gotcha.
When it comes to the collaboration, it was tricky because a lot of it was preset.
Yeah.
By the powers that be.
Mm-hmm.
So choreo couldn't really change
right.
because they weren't coming up with it. They were basically just regurgitating it.
Gotcha.
And the music was hard. I mean, they had a lot. They had a Glee song in there.
Oh wow! Yeah,
the Decca Rooftop.
Yeah,
if you're familiar with it.
No, that one's complicated.
It's like a 8-part split at some moments, and so a lot of it, unfortunately, was as you go along, we're mm-hmm. learning these things in real time, and so. What ended up happening, which I think was great, is I added sweeteners to a lot of stuff.
Mm.
So we had a day where we didn't have a lot to do. And so I said, let's take 4 hours. And, you know, I brought my like microphone and my little, you know, mixing board or whatever. And I was like, let's record the harmonies. I'll overlay it into the sound. It'll be great. There were a couple things we didn't get to for time. So between me and Hadley, we sang all of the parts.
Oh my gosh. So it's layering it in so that they could do the dance and do whatever needed to happen.
Yeah. The show was offhandedly titled Cardio Christmas, and it was no joke. I mean, it was
nonstop.
There's no plot. It was just song.
Right.
So it's like quick changes, like, you know, it's hard.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like a lot of music direction, and granted, this is just like from my experience working with other music directors, a lot of the job ends up being problem solving by the time that you start getting nearer and nearer to the show. And like, I think we don't recognize that all the time. And sometimes it's like, look, if this certain thing isn't working, what can I do? What can we do musically so that it can still sound good and work with what's happening on stage?
It does feel like a back burner thought of, especially if you're doing things that are different, you know,
right?
Like if it's not like for, if you don't have the music yet, or let's say if there's a band, you don't have the band yet.
Right.
If you're doing a jukebox musical and there's so many different iterations of one song.
Yeah.
And you're playing.
Like, okay, which one?
You know, right. You're learning it with choreo to this version. And then you're like, oh, it's actually this version with these vamps that you didn't know about and this key change you didn't know about.
Yeah,
it's a lot of afterthought, but that's why pre-production meetings are so important.
Yeah, and it very much keeps you on your toes, if nothing else. I'm curious if there are like, granted, I feel like in many ways you've fallen into this role of music director, but as you're gaining more experience, are there any shows in particular that you're like, you know what? I would actually love to get my hands on that, like as a music director.
As a music director, there's two shows that I'm really like, I would do anything for to the degree of like, I would love to conduct this. I spend like chunks of time going through the conductor score and like pretending that I'm conducting. Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, absolutely.
And Rent.
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see that. Those are both very much up your alley because you definitely have this like pop and rock sensibility that I think would work really well for both of those shows. And also, it's just, they're both so much fun. Like,
yeah, the music in Jesus Christ Superstar is like one of those things where I listen to the overture and I get excited.
Yeah.
It's and that's so good. It's so good. Yeah, I would love to. That's what I'm doing now is I'm taking Jesus Christ Superstar and I'm going through song by song and I'm like, as if I was like ready to do the show just because
who knows, you
know, that would be a thing I would like to do is conduct or something.
Absolutely. And it's a way, like, as silly as it is, when performers rehearse and practice the things that we want to do as a performer, like whatever role we want to do. So it would make sense as like someone who would like want to conduct or direct is to get familiar with the material. Like, as silly as it sounds to like sit there and conduct, it makes sense. You're rehearsing the thing that you want to be doing. So yeah, totally. No, it absolutely makes sense. So you are an associate artistic director for Theater Untitled. Where is that based? How'd you find yourself in this position? All that good stuff.
It is based in the city. I don't know if it's more specifically Harlem, but that's kind of where we had found ourselves because the office is the apartment.
Yeah.
I had found myself with Theater Untitled. The two co-founders of Theater Untitled were my mentors from basically since I started doing theater. They were most of my experience growing up was obviously with Actors Professional Theater Conservatory housed at Allenbury Playhouse, which is no longer called that, but that's what it means in my heart.
Yeah.
And it was the artistic director and the PSM for many years. And we were very, I mean, they're my best friends to this day. So yeah. they wanted to do a, they had been let go from Allenberry. They wanted to start a theater company. And so I was kind of brought on board as just to help out and have a fancy title for basically doing what this startup theater company entails. And so it's we do readings a couple times a month, or not a month, year, like mm-hmm. 4 or 5. And we really wanted to bring underrepresented voices into the theater community, if it's you know, for whatever that means to whomever, kind of give a name to the nameless, and if you're not being heard, we want to give you that platform to get your work read. So yeah, it's great. It's the parent product to APTC, so they kind of go in tandem, but I'd been mixed with that technically since I was 12.
Gotcha.
as we call them, young artists. I was a young artist, and then now I'm with the kind of theater business side of it, and I'm also the senior teaching artist for the whole thing. And
yeah, I was going to bring that up, that you're now a senior teaching artist with them. What do you teach there, and what ages?
Yeah, that's where Hercules and SpongeBob come into play.
Apologies. My cat decided to say hello and come join the
welcome to the podcast. Chat.
Exactly. Welcome to the chat. He has big orange cat energy, but anyway, continue.
APTC is what SpongeBob and Hercules will be. So it's that it's a partnership with Forestburg. So we do all the work. They let us have that space through friendships. So I was a teaching artist. Obviously this coming summer I will be. Last year and the year before I directed The Lion That Would Be King. but that was the company that I grew up in. So it was really cool to, you know, be able to teach kids and be able to say, like, I was your age, I was doing the exact same thing you're doing, and kind of have a little bit more of a personal connection with them, and
absolutely,
and, you know, see the kids that are 8 years old and don't know what they want to do, or I don't know if my voice sounds good, and just be like, I've been there, I've literally been there, and the show is gonna go up. It's going to be great, and you know, hopefully inspire the next generation of artists.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you always been interested in teaching, or is this something that came to fruition by having gone through the program previously?
I never thought about teaching up until I had to, and I directed, and it really changed my life a little bit, and really wanted to. Especially with kids, and you know, teach them that it's not all, you know, because I had as everyone does, school can be hard, and teachers can be nice, and some teachers cannot be nice, and you know, theater is also such a very sensitive place.
Yeah, absolutely, very vulnerable.
For like 8 year olds to explore.
Yeah.
And it did such wonders for me. So I really, being able to be on the flip side of that and see both sides of the coin, it really was like, this might be something that actually will bring me a lot of happiness. And so I want to keep doing it.
Absolutely. Well, and you definitely are, considering that you're now a voice and acting teacher with Inner Artists Performing Studios. And I was like looking into it. And of course, this company is based in Atlanta. So I'm assuming you're teaching it all remotely.
Yes, I am.
And you started pretty recently with Inner Artist. How's that going?
It's good. It's good. It's like a lot of things, it's somewhat of a startup type of business. So it's interesting. You meet a lot of what's nice about it is it's a lot of different backgrounds.
Yeah.
You know, I have a couple of clients that are our age. I have a couple of clients that are retired.
Oh, wow.
And just want to learn to sing better for fun or for their church choir or for karaoke or whatever it is. So it's really nice to see implementing some sort of artistic curriculum outside of a career focused.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that's really wild.
I'm sure that's also been like really nice. And it's always that reminder of like, oh, right. Like some people do this for fun and that's okay too. And that's fun. And that's great. Like,
I think it's great that I was like, you just want to sing for fun and not for like an audition. This is great. Yeah. Like it makes it so much more fun because we can talk about things in a way that's like there's no value placed to it. There's not like, I sound bad. It's like, no, we're just going to learn how to sing healthier and so it doesn't hurt. And it's really cool. But it's been interesting. It's like I said, it's still kind of a startup. So I recently just joined the sales side of it. So looking to find more clients and bring some awareness to the company. But it's a really cool, really easy, do it from the comfort of your home because it's all remote. So it's nice.
Well, and I saw that you're doing voice and acting. So in terms of acting, is it like coaching monologues and that kind of thing?
A couple of my clients are theater based. A lot of them, because this also falls into that same category, is a lot of voice acting.
Oh, that's fascinating.
A lot of voice acting in different regards to, you know, audiobooks or commercials or the whole thing, which has been a learning curve because I don't know as much about it. So it was cool for me to learn, but then it's like monologues or I had a client who does a lot of like background work in TV shows as like a security guard.
Yeah.
Because like IMDb is all like cops and blue bloods and like every single cop show in the world. And so, and as a background, he doesn't necessarily have a lot of lines or any lines.
Right.
So a lot of our work was just like physicality stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be anything. And it's always exciting to see like,
so cool.
What is this client going to do?
Yeah. Because I can imagine a lot of times going into like a session, you're like, I don't know what we're going to work on today sometimes, but you're like, let's try it out. Let's have fun.
I'm game for anything. It's been really, and it helps me learn a lot because I have to think on my toes and they'll throw me a curveball and I'll be like, let's explore this together. What this means. It's cool. It's really interesting.
Yeah. It's a different kind of collaboration. It's teaching, but it's learning from each other.
Totally.
That's amazing. How can someone study with you with any of the subjects we've been talking about? How can people like get in contact for that kind of thing?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You can go to innerartistperformancestudios.com and I'm one of the coaches and you can book a session with me, or if you want to reach out to me on Instagram or however you want to find me, I can get you set up there.
Amazing.
I'm always taking new clients. So
perfect. And then you also have, and correct me if I'm wrong, you also have a little business doing sheet music and accompaniment tracks for people as well.
I do.
What all do you offer and how can people reach out to you for that?
Anything and everything you need, I will try my best to do. Anything from sheet music to accompaniment tracks, transpositions. If you have a song you don't know what audition cut you should make, I can help. If you want a song that doesn't have sheet music to it, I can make that for you.
That's hard too, because I've run into that before, and let me tell you, it's hard to find someone to do that sometimes.
It's very hard, but it's something that I've learned to do for my own personal use. So
yeah, I feel like you're kind of the perfect person to do something like that for, like with music that isn't necessarily produced on sheet music. I feel like you're very much the person for that.
Yes. Yeah. So like anything. I've made accompaniment tracks for people with multiple instruments. Mm-hmm. If you want it for a performance track for anything, I just made like 4 fully orchestrated pieces for someone.
That's so cool.
Like anything you need, I'll try my best to do. And you can, however you want to find me, you can reach out. I'm always happy to help.
Your website,
Instagram, website, Facebook.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm always happy to help where I can.
I love that. And we are getting to the end of this episode. So where can people find you on social media?
You can find me at Drew J. Patty on Instagram. That's probably the best place to find me. My website is drewjpatty.com. Yeah. Hit me up with anything, music you need. That's my jam.
I love it. And I'll put the links to everything below once this episode is over so people can actually access those things and not have to hunt them down on their own. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Laura_Marjoram and apparently TikTok now because I did in fact do that and I have not added that to my description. So I needed edit that myself. Anyway, I also have a website, www.lauramarjoram.com. You can find this show on Instagram at Overtures Show. That's where I post all the upcoming schedules as well as ways to submit questions and say hello to guests and that kind of thing. And then, of course, if you're watching this currently, you're on YouTube. Yay! Thank you for watching. It was so awesome to have you all. If you can, like, subscribe, comment, all the interactions help. It helps me know that there are, in fact, people listening and watching, and that's always so exciting. And then after the fact, we put episodes on Spotify and Apple Music. I say we, like it's more than one person. It's just me. So check it out on Spotify and Apple Music. You can listen on the go. I have a lovely comment here from Remy Barzin. Thank you, Remy. Another fabulous episode. Great host, great guest, all things fabulous. Thank you, Remy. And thank you for being an amazing guest back when. Thank you so much. And then we also have a Ko-fi page. So if you feel so inclined to donate a cup of coffee, then it helps me keep this show running and talk to more amazingly talented guests like Drew. Drew, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
I don't think so. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast. Hopefully I didn't ramble too much.
This has really been great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you everyone for hanging out with us this evening. My cat is also apparently coming to say goodbye and goodnight. Thank you all for watching and we'll see you all next time. Bye.